Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 495, more surprises as on the heels of Ted Cruz withdrawing from the presidential primary race on Tuesday, May 3rd. Now on Wednesday, May 4th, Ohio Governor John Kasich withdrew. So we're going to talk about these latest developments in podcast 495. Well, just to start out the podcast, Mobile Podcast Command. You've heard me talk a lot about Mobile Podcast Command. I'm kind of sketching out plans for summer operations in Mobile Podcast Command, which is a Ford 450 Super Duty diesel ambulance. I am accepting donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Right under the picture of the Ford 450 Super Duty ambulance is a donate button. You click on that. And I've often thanked the people who have donated or contributed to the Bob Davis Podcast. It's a business, so it's not tax deductible, but it helps us keep operations going. And it all goes to diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon Coffee and Windex and, you know, stuff for operations in the truck. I'm thinking about going again to Sturgis, Burning Man, the Air Show, plus a lot of political stuff this summer. So really appreciate the donations. But the thing about Mobile Podcast Command is the whole story of that is I just wanted a van. And my friend Ed Johnson at xgovernmentcars.com said, we're going to get you an ambulance because it's cheaper and it's going to be much better for you. And the thing is a beast. It runs great. And like everything from xgovernmentcars.com, it is reliable and runs great. And, you know, these are fleet-maintained vehicles, and they're made ready for you at xgovernmentcars.com. Now, Ed wants me to tell everybody the one-acre lot out in Forest Lake, Minnesota, is ready for you to check out, and they are getting new cars in every day, you know, new cars from the government, fleet-maintained, used cars, Crown Vicks, Chargers, Impalas, the Ford Police sedan, the Ford Police SUVs, plus trucks, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. And there's a couple of key points. First of all, don't forget the ex-government cars center, the one-acre lot, which we refer to as the ex-government trucks mega truck center, but they also have the cars there, is at 356 19th Street in Forest Lake. They have fast financing for all credit levels at xgovernmentcars.com. They have work trucks, SUVs, vans, and of course, the great ex-government cars. They have a three-day peace of mind guarantee, so you buy with confidence, and they take trades. They pay the highest values for trades every day without a lot of BS. Don't forget xgovernmentcars.com, the one-acre lot at 356 19th Street in Forest Lake. 763-777-8782, 763-777-8782, or check them out online at xgovernmentcars.com and xgovernmenttrucks.com. And thanks for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Yeah, we got the megaphone.
xgovernmentcars.com.
With the announcement of Kasich's withdrawal, I need to do another podcast as a companion to podcast 494. This happens in podcasting, which is one of the reasons I don't like to get too topical because things change rapidly and then you have to do updates like this. So today is the day that Kasich withdrew, and now the chances of Donald Trump being able to garner enough delegates to win the Republican nomination on the first ballot improves drastically. So, you know, I've been saying nothing is cast in stone at this point, so I need to say, well, there's clearly now a path to the potential that Trump would be the nominee. Late last night in podcast time, the chair of the Republican National Committee, Priebus, had not thrown his unequivocal support to Trump. This morning, they started the hashtag Never Hillary thing, which is stupid, but they did it. And supposedly, the Republican National Committee is, quote, getting behind Trump as the presumptive nominee. In fact, just late, very late last night, early this morning, Priebus sent out the famous tweet that said that he was, you know, that Trump would be the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party at this point. So now there's a new dynamic in the race. And to be fair, I don't like predicting the future, and I never have. And throughout this process, I never have. The only thing I did do was sort of state disbelief that as long as Cruz and Kasich stayed in the race, the idea that Trump would be a presumptive nominee was absurd. And I don't believe in predicting the future because conditions on the ground, especially in politics, change. I still don't think the Republican establishment is behind Donald Trump. There's a lot of ground to cover between now and the convention. There will still be Cruz, Kasich, Rubio, even Bush delegates at the convention. We don't know what the Cruz plan is for the convention. As you heard last night, if you listened to the interview with Mandy Benz, who's a state party coordinator, or a state party, a state Cruz campaign coordinator. So that totals somewhere around 600 delegates. And I'm not saying Trump's not going to get it or anything else. I'm just saying that no matter what Trump accrues between now and convention time, and no matter what the actual count turns out to be in terms of delegates selected at state conventions and congressional district conventions, which is still going on in a lot of states that the media has just passed up and forgotten about because they had their primaries later, or, you know, much earlier in the year, predicting what will or won't happen at the convention is dangerous. And I, again, last night saw people standing up in front of giant monitors pointing at states in the West, the upcoming primaries in South Dakota and California and Missouri, or not Missouri, but New Mexico, places like that, and saying, this is what's going to happen because here's the number of delegates that will be garnered at these. I don't know how the delegates are going to be distributed. You know, Pennsylvania still hasn't determined how they're going to distribute their delegates. You know, for example, in my state, in Minnesota, they've been electing Cruz delegates at all the congressional district conventions. So I don't know whether those people are going to end up voting for Trump, which I would be highly surprised if they're going to, you know, be excited about voting for Trump. They may hold their nose, but those delegates are going to go to the convention really leaderless in the sense that we don't know what the Cruz plan for those delegates are. Now, by the time you hear this podcast, there may be. My purpose in talking about this is it irritates me when I hear people saying, okay, well, it's a clear path to, so he's the presumptive nominee. And I'm not saying he won't be. Will Trump get the nomination on the first ballot? And at this point, I would have to say probably with caveats, he will. And my caveats are, first of all, I've learned to treat the media storyline with a fair amount of skepticism. And I told you that before, if Trump won Indiana, the media storyline would turn to him being the presumptive nominee. You know, the only thing that really changed there was first Cruz got out, surprisingly, and then Kasich got out. So clearly the people in charge of things have told people in campaigns, now is the time if you're going to go. Second, what happens now to all the Republican PAC donors and major party supporters who simply do not like Trump? Are they going to go away? What happens to the Never Trump people? Are they gonna, does Eric Erickson and his and the like suddenly vote for Hillary? I'd be really surprised. What does somebody like Glenn Beck do? Take a couple days off and try to collect himself because George Washington didn't win enough votes to stay in the race? It's easier, actually, for me to see Kasich supporters sliding to Trump, but Cruz and Rubio supporters sliding to Trump are a different story. So I don't know what's going to happen with the delegates that have been pledged to those two candidates until they are released. Now, they may release those candidates. I mean, those, I keep calling delegates candidates. They may release those delegates, but we don't know whether they're going to do it or not. Finally, I wonder whether the establishment doesn't have a few more tricks up their sleeve. So I would say that this is a dangerous time for Trump. Nothing is cast in stone at this point, even though the media would have you believe that. There are a few more primaries. I went through them in the previous podcast, 494. Being the presumptive nominee, now he's a target. And the GOP establishment that never really supported Trump is now suddenly kowtowing to Trump. So I don't put anything beneath them and what they will do or not do or what they'll turn to in order to stay in control. A long time ago, I said that either the establishment would try to knock Trump out, and if that didn't work, they would suddenly turn and embrace him. And maybe that has happened. And if that is what has happened, then so be it. I don't, you know, I've said on numerous occasions that I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm not a Cruz supporter. I'm not a Hillary or Bernie supporter. I never supported any of the Republican or Democrat candidates. Honestly, I really don't like any of them. But I love the feeling of making a statement about something and then having it happen. So, you know, I hate it when I say something and it doesn't happen just the way I say it, which is ridiculous because things just don't work that way. Obviously, as far as the Political Walking Dead podcast is concerned, I was certainly right about Cruz and Kasich. And I remember I did that podcast because I had Cruz supporters telling me he was going to be the nominee and that he was going to wrap up all the delegates and all he had to do was stay in and it was going to be, you know, it was going to be be Cruz. And so I did that because I thought of Cruz and Kasich, particularly after Super Tuesday and then after the East Coast stuff, as the political walking dead. It was only a matter of time before they had to basically get out of the race. I did think, and I'm going to say this again, I am surprised that Cruz pulled out, because given what he has, for him to pull out when he did was, you know, he could have stayed in and he had a ticket to the big game, so to speak. He had a chip in the big game. Maybe he chickened out or something. So I still think there's more to that whole Cruz thing than meets the eye. The Kasich thing, you know, it's not a big campaign. They never had that much money. I think he won one primary. You know, he won Ohio. You know, he did 8% in Indiana and very low percentages out east. So, you know, I'm not surprised to see Kasich pull out. It remains to be seen whether there is some other plan for knocking Trump out before he gets to the convention, or more probably at the convention, if that's going to happen, even if he shows up with 1,280 delegates or 1,237 delegates. And we don't know yet whether he's going to actually have an actual head count that will get him a win on the first ballot. There might be surprises at the convention yet. I'm not saying there will be, because I want people to be clear about that. I want people saying, you said, because I never said anything. I never said that this was going to happen or that was going to happen. I posed the question, are these people the political walking dead? Trump may still be one of the political walking dead. We have to see what happens. So you've heard the phrase, in case of emergency, break glass, which is probably what the RNC did when they found out that Trump won the Indiana primary by 30% or 20% or whatever it was, 51%, 60%, 58% to the closest was 36% in the case of Cruz. It was time to break glass and figure out what to do and sort of punt. If you are at home or you're in a business and you have plumbing problems, it's the same situation. Usually nobody knows what to do. So let me recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That, of course, means the suburbs too. So if you have a problem at business, you have a problem at home, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. One of the other things I learned was that they also do fire mitigation. They were called out to a house that had burned, and you know, they've got to rip out all the drywall and everything else and redo the plumbing down in the basement because that was where the fire started. And so they do that kind of work as well. So for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. They're just west of the state capitol. For emergency service, for fire mitigation, for contracting work, for business, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 927-6488, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Now, if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, don't forget that Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. What is it? It's a visual representation of your angle of attack, which comes in very handy when you're turning on final approach. That's where pilots get into trouble. That's where Alpha Systems saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banner. It will take you to their page, the Alpha Systems banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. It'll take you to their page, and you can watch a video that I actually voiced, which explains how it works and shows you how it works with a former U-2 pilot flying the final approach. So you can see how it works. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks, Alpha, for being the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcasts. So in the second part of this kind of shorter podcast about the most recent developments on the Republican side in the primary race, which has been vexing to me from the beginning, which I'm going to talk about a little bit. What if Trump is the nominee? And I'm asking this of people who are Cruz and Rubio supporters and Bush supporters, and even also Trump supporters. Already, we're seeing the same kind of thing now with Democrats that we saw with Republicans for Cruz and the establishment before the East Coast primaries 2 weeks ago, where Trump opened a huge lead. He's a bully. If you're a woman, you're going to vote for Hillary. If you're for women, you should vote for Hillary. If you don't, you're a creep. He's a xenophobe. whatever that is. If I even wonder if people actually understand what a xenophobe is. It's not a word that I use very often. He's an authoritarian. Again, these are words that make you sound really intelligent at the party with all of the other people who have PhDs and masters, but I don't know that they actually mean anything. And of course, he can't win. It's impossible for Trump to win. He can't win. They said that about Trump from the very beginning with the Republicans. He's not going to win. He can't win. He's not going to, because everybody thought Jeb Bush was going to be the nominee. Today was the big story about, you know, adding up all the polls and saying, well, here's Donald Trump, and he's starting in a huge hole, meaning that he's, you know, Hillary Clinton, all the polls showed that she would beat him. Bernie Sanders would beat him in a general election. And in particular, with the Electoral College, I saw a piece last night about how even if things go well for Trump, he's got an Electoral College problem because nobody in Florida is going to vote for him and nobody in New York is going to. I mean, this kind of thing. And you just don't know if that's true. Could he win Florida? Absolutely. You know, New York? Maybe. I don't know. It depends. New York's obviously very much a blue state. I don't think Donald Trump's going to win Minnesota, but I'm not going to go say he's not going to win Minnesota at this point. We don't know how things will go down, but I'll give you a couple things to talk about. It is fair to suggest that the media has paid far too many compliments to the so-called Republican field at the start of the primaries. And I don't think that the Republican field was that great. I think they made Trump look good because most of them were simply not ready for prime time, even though some of them were previous candidates in previous election cycles for president. And I don't want to minimize Trump's accomplishment in besting a field of 17 Republican campaign, experienced veteran campaigners. But going up against the Democrat machine in the form of Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders is far different from going up against broken down Republicans like Jeb Bush, Rick Perry, Chris Christie, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, and John Kasich, or politicians or neophytes. You know, two different things in this list that I'm going to give you now, but we have some politicians, you know, experienced politicians, but we also have some neophytes in this list who have a very narrow appeal, like Rand Paul, Scott Walker, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Carly Farina, and Ben Carson, or even virtual unknowns like Jim Gilmore, who nobody even knew Jim Gilmore was in the race. Who were all up on that debate stage. And the truth is that none of these challengers were ever really that good. Certainly, Scott Walker had a constituency in Wisconsin. Rand Paul had a constituency with the former Ron Paul-type people. Ted Cruz had a constituency. Marco Rubio was seen as an establishment candidate. Carly Farina didn't really have a constituency, but she was the only woman in the Republican race. Ben Carson didn't, just kind of fizzled. He was the only black candidate in the Republican race and the only candidate that might even be considered cerebral in the race. You can go through the whole list. Jeb Bush didn't, his heart was never in it. Rick Perry, I don't even know what he was doing there. Chris Christie, after Bridgegate, has no hope for national office. Rick Santorum has run 100 times. Mike Huckabee, don't even get me started. John Kasich, I think acquitted himself well, but nobody could really understand why he remained in the race other than the fact that he was the Ohio governor, and I think they wanted him in there, and he won Ohio. So there's that. But again, none of those challengers were ever really very good on television and really very good at connecting with people in today's political environment. I'm convinced Trump's arrival in the race was unexpected and therefore immediately discounted by the establishment until it was too late, as is common with new things and new different things. And sometimes brilliant things are often viewed as being strange or weird or stupid, and people discount them until it is too late. It happens all the time, and it happens in all kinds of fields. And as I've said, the Republicans' huge field and so many scheduled debates turned the whole process into reality television, which ends up benefiting a candidate like Donald Trump. I'm very concerned about what will happen in the next election cycle with the primary process, because we are very close to turning it into a popular vote runoff, which is not something that our electoral system constitutionally calls for. And I realize we have 50 individual states with 50 individual elections, and delegates have to be selected in some way, shape, or form. But political party primaries are not part of the actual constitutional election process, at least at the federal level. So this is kind of a misshapen, half-born Chimera, this primary system, and I don't like it. And I've often said that it's really something for the media, and this benefits people like Donald Trump. I've also often said that the Republicans deserve Trump because, by and large, the rank-and-file Republican voter is very, very rhetorical, very emotional, and it's often, you know, the Republican electorate described as angry and frustrated or disenfranchised, two at least very emotional themes, and they aren't concerned so much about the issues or learning about issues as they are about getting somebody who can win by hook or by crook. I honestly feel, after talking to Republicans for many years, both on the radio and, you know, in person, going to these meetings, that really what they want is somebody who can win the argument over the back fence, and that's Donald Trump. It's revealing that the two representatives of so-called conservative politics this year turn out to be Donald Trump, a trade protectionist, a nativist, and Ted Cruz, who is an evangelical and self-described constitutionalist. With both of them, there is a pronounced lack of command of the issues or plans that have any real meat to address specific problems in our time beyond totally destroying ISIS, and that's a quote, or making America great again, or bringing back Reagan's prosperity, which sounds good, which gets people, I guess, you know, fired up. But getting there is another story, because the problems we have today are different from the problems we had 30 or 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 70 years ago. Now, if Trump is the nominee, and for the rest of the summer, all you're going to hear about is how he can't win. Well, the truth is Donald Trump can win the presidency, and he might win the presidency. And I think that's going to be, for Republicans, the hardest part may actually be a Trump victory and a Trump presidency, because we don't know what he'll do. And I don't think Republicans know what he'll do. I don't think he knows what he'll do. He could be a great president, and he could be a disaster. It all depends on how things work out. But more importantly, he could be a disaster for people who are, quote unquote, conservatives. Now, as far as the rest of the political world, why would I say that Donald Trump could be president, considering all the polls that show Hillary Clinton, even though there's one now that shows Hillary Clinton and Trump neck and neck? Democrats, why would you say Democrats would not vote in large enough numbers to put Hillary Clinton in the White House? Well, Democrats are tepid on Hillary Clinton. They see her as a centrist sellout, a centrist establishment candidate, and they feel that she's being pushed on them much the same way Jeb Bush was being pushed on Republicans, which is a feather in the cap of Republicans, because at least, more than anything, at least if Donald Trump did anything, he served to finally put the Bush thing to bed for a while. I don't think that protests by immigrant groups, Black Lives Matter, or any of the radical left-wing groups have done anything to hurt Donald Trump. I think, in fact, that those protests have actually helped Donald Trump, because I think most Americans have about had it with the Islamic political groups and the Black Lives Matter group and La Raza and the immigration activists running around with red flags and red kerchiefs over their mouths and, you know, coming this close to true street violence. I don't think that helps the Democratic Party, and in fact could severely hurt the Democratic Party unless they figure out a way to get those people under control. It should be pointed out that polls have been mostly on track about Trump in most cases this primary season, at least where the popular vote is concerned, and at least where Republicans are concerned. We'll have to see if that is true with the polls as we get closer to the presidential election, the actual presidential election in the fall of 2016. But looking at polls now, I don't know that that tells us much of anything. There's going to be a lot of analysis on the Electoral College. You're going to hear that a lot. You're going to hear a lot of people asking why we have the Electoral College. You're going to hear a lot of people talking about how we should get rid of it. You're going to hear a lot about the National Popular Vote movement, which unfortunately is considered a conservative movement. That's a joke. It's, you know, if anything, we should be freeing the Electoral College to vote as they choose to. There's a reason why we have an Electoral College in this country, and we should allow it to work as it was intended to work. So no, I'm not one of those National Popular Vote people. I don't think the president should be popularly elected. If you are concerned about a Donald Trump presidency, this is one of the best reasons not to allow presidents to be popularly elected. There will be a lot of talk about national polls showing Trump in the hole. You're going to hear that a lot, as I said, but don't, you know, until we get closer to the election, it's hard to tell. There's going to be a lot of talk about rank and file Republicans refusing to vote for him, and we don't know. Again, I would say most of that is idle chatter. My experience with Republicans is that they will vote for the nominee. They tend to be much more, they tend to have a bark that is much worse than their bite. So let's wait until Trump is actually nominated and find out who his vice presidential running mate is. And then let's wait and see what the Democrats decide to do, because Bernie Sanders is still very much in this race. And I haven't talked a lot about it because of the superdelegates on the, you know, the Democrat side tend to stabilize the race. But Bernie Sanders won Indiana, and Bernie Sanders won at least one of the states out east, and Bernie Sanders continues to win primaries, and Bernie Sanders could potentially win California. So, you know, where you see people who are really progressives, Bernie Sanders is their guy. Minnesota, Bernie Sanders won Minnesota, and we in Minnesota are very familiar with the progressive movement. So, as far as the Democratic Party and the race on the Democratic Party, the superdelegates thing is usually the fallback position to say that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. The thing about the superdelegates is they can be persuaded to vote for Bernie Sanders if it appears that he is more popular. So I don't think you can settle on a nominee yet on the Democrat side of this race. I think it is fair to suggest that since President Obama, progressives really have taken over the Democratic Party, and many of them aren't too enthused about Hillary Clinton. I don't think the president is too enthused about Hillary Clinton. I really don't think the president wants Hillary Clinton to succeed him. So I'm not sure that I think he'd be much happier with a Bernie Sanders succeeding him than a Hillary Clinton. If Bernie Sanders runs, I think Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders would be a race that is much more representative about what is going on in America than Hillary Clinton and a centrist Republican candidate, or Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So once the candidates have actually received their party's nominations and picked running mates, then discussions about their chances of winning are, permissible. But until then, talking about who's going to win the presidential race is actually premature. And you're just trying to predict the future based on tarot cards, because what's in the wind? Again, you're just trying to predict the future based on something in your head, and you get surprises like Ted Cruz pulling out. So we don't know what's going to happen, and we don't know what's going to happen to Donald Trump, and we don't know what kind of stuff is out there about Donald Trump that may, you know, come home to roost at the convention. And we don't know what's going to happen in the actual Republican convention, So, for example, we still don't know what has happened with the scuttlebutt about a third-party centrist or unity candidacy from disaffected Republicans, and there are still many, and they've shut up in the last couple of days, but they're not going to go away. So finally, we will have to have more discussion about what it means to be a conservative, because I don't think conservatives actually exist anymore. Trade protectionism, support for minimum wage, higher taxation on the wealthy, government spending on infrastructure projects, to name just some of the ideas Donald Trump has advocated for or said, I'm going to look at that, by the way, not to mention what appears to be an oddly interventionist foreign policy concept. Is that conservative? If you believe that we have shipped all of our jobs to China and just need to bring them back and everything will be well, do you think that is a Republican or a traditionally Democrat view in terms of the spread of American politics? Is a conservative someone who is for personal liberty or against it? What does the concept of personal liberty actually mean to you? What would it mean if we took the country back to the 1920s, constitutionally speaking? Because it seems like sometimes some quote-unquote conservatives are advocating for things like that. You know, and this is before you even get into the Federal Reserve and the fair tax thing. I mean, the fair tax everyone talked about with the Cruz campaign and around it is an interesting idea. But the fair tax also calls for a minimum wage, minimum income as part of the plan. So things like that really bother me. If the tax rate is relatively low on most income categories, how does lowering the tax on, you know, all Americans stimulate the economy. You know, you can certainly lower taxes, but the supply side idea that if you only lower taxes, which by the way isn't supply side economics, you'll stimulate the economy. You have to also reduce spending so that there's more. There's more money in general being directed not by government but by individuals. So in the final analysis, I see a grab bag of so-called policy ideas in the conservative portfolio, which are really little more than rhetorical exercises, as poorly thought out, poorly organized, and terribly communicated most of the time. Most of the policy ideas that supposedly come from conservatives don't address the actual complex of problems in our society or the world. They are much more complex than the problems we faced 40 or 60 years ago or 70 or 80 years ago. The other thing is that things that worked 40 years ago aren't going to work now. Things that worked 80 years ago aren't going to work now. And we seem to be in the process of sort of pulling out solutions from the past. For example, for the Democrats, things that worked or supposedly worked 70 years ago with FDR in terms of dealing with the Depression aren't going to work now either. And if you actually study your history of the 1930s and reactions to the Depression, you find out that those solutions really didn't work then either. The other thing is this whole idea of trying to figure out where we are in history at this time. And if you're a student of history, you're always trying to figure out, well, what is this like? You know, is history repeating itself? What's the ripples? What are the differences? What are the wrinkles? And this is a question, these are questions I don't think most people think about. I think, in fact, most people who are political junkies or politically involved or watching this, whether they're passively involved or actively involved, so politicians, reporters, hosts, writers, pundits, political staffers, and volunteers, and so the leaders and then the rank and file voters, I think are completely immersed in the day-to-day, he said, she said, and the cult of personality associated with these campaigns. And they really aren't thinking about the country's place in the world, our place in history, or where we are right now in history. If you doubt me, all you have to do is spend some time looking at Twitter or Facebook and read some of the comments people make, and it's both fascinating and frightening. And I think the failure of both mainline parties, both equally, is the failure to really set out a vision for the future that pulls things together and brings people together. And I mean, I'm not saying I know that that's possible, but I'm not hearing it from either political party. I don't think they actually have such a plan. I don't think we have such a plan. I don't think anybody knows how to argue against, for example, the millennials blame the baby boom population for getting rid of all the manufacturing jobs. Well, that's really not what happened, but rhetorically, that's the kind of argument that you hear. That's the kind of, we have a lot of student debt, so we want Bernie Sanders to take care of this because that's the solution. Well, no, really, that's the problem. But nobody seems to be able to argue those issues. I've read enough history to know that when a people, in other words, a people as in a country, get into a situation like this, a place like this, events have a way of intervening to change things in ways nobody expected. And it's usually, unfortunately, a worst case scenario and not very much fun. Think the death of the Great Khan. People don't know, but the Khan's armies were on the edge of Eastern Europe when he died, and he called all of them back. The government, the Khan's people called all of them back, because history would have been significantly different if those armies from the Great Khan had been able to continue on into Eastern Europe. Or World War I, which changed the map of the Middle East and really was the beginning of the decline of the British Empire. Or World War II, which we know so well today, how that changed. Or you can go back to the collapse of the Ottomans or the collapse of the Caliphs at the dawn of the Ottoman Empire. Each of these eras produce tectonic changes in human history with all the economic, social, military, and national upheavals. One of my favorite stories is that if we hadn't had the Depression in 1929, we would have had TV in the 30s. The 50s would have happened in the 30s or something like that. So think of the changes that took place in the 1950s and 60s in this country. It's not perfect because obviously post-World War II, there was a lot more prosperity. But you know, when I say tectonic changes, history and life can be very different if we take different courses. So to me right now, it just feels like we're on a train headed in a particular direction and nothing seems to be able to change that. And the reality is, and this is why I don't support any of the candidates, we're just going to have to see where these tracks lead because there's little alternative to this point. If you ask me, and I will tell you more in future podcasts and the New Thinking podcast and so forth, well, what do you want? I want a considerably less powerful federal government and considerably less powerful state governments and considerably less powerful state organs, whatever they are, county, local, state, and national. I think that our technology, I think that science, I think that society is actually militating for actually less government all over the world as opposed to more government. And I think at some point our leaders are going to have to get out of the way and allow that to happen. And I haven't thought much more about that. But I believe that decentralized power is the future, not centralized power. So the worst thing we can do is try to centralize power and find federal solutions to local problems and find complex government solutions to complex social problems. I think people solve their problems easier and better. The monarch that rules easily is the better ruler, or as Lincoln said, let him up easy. And I think that the people that we're putting in charge are not letting us up easy. They're not letting us do what we do, which is solve problems as individuals. That's what freedom's all about. So in a nutshell, I don't hear anybody talking about that stuff. And I'll talk more about that going forward. But that's sort of where we're at here on the eve of the so-called inevitable Trump candidacy for the Republicans and all that it means or doesn't mean. Thanks once again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for emergency service. You don't have to break glass. You just have to call them. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, wherever you are in the metro, they can get you a plumber, and that means the suburbs too. For four generations, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Thanks once again to exgovernmentcars.com. Now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota, the big 1 acre lot you can snake through and check out the ex-government cars and the trucks, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. 356 19th Street in Forest Lake. And don't forget to look for ex-government cars and ex-government trucks Star White at Comic-Con. That's going to be great. So, you know, if you're heading out this weekend for Comic-Con, you'll look for ex-government cars there.
ExGovernmentCars.com.
All right, you guys, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, and thanks for being patient with me through these big changes in politics. Sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel is, in fact, a train. Or not. We'll just have to see what happens. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher.com, or TuneIn, depending on your device. Stitcher and TuneIn work pretty good with Androids. iTunes, of course, works great with your iPhone, and I love it when people subscribe. Thank you for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, where I am bdavis7843, and on Twitter, I'm at Bob Davis Podcasts. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, at thebobdavispodcast.com. And one more thing. Somebody wrote on my Facebook page, don't get mad at me for saying this because I'm not into digital media, but we really miss you on the radio. Well, I am back on the radio, and I have a syndicated radio show. And as I get new affiliates, I'll let you know. But it is available right now if you're in the Twin Cities on AM 1280 The Patriot at 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And I'm also posting that show here at thebobdavispodcast.com for a while so you can hear what it sounds like. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, I'm back on the radio. I've done whole podcasts about how I feel about it, but I really appreciate the folks at Salem and The Patriot for putting the show on. Really excited about it continuing. So yeah, there is a radio show associated with the Bob Davis Podcasts. And thanks again for you guys for listening at thebobdavispodcast.com to podcast 495.